Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the No Mind Podcast. My name is Mitch Maxine. As always, if you have any comments or questions, please put them on the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or send me an email at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Before we get into the topic, I want to introduce the guest today. First of all, my brother, who's kind of become a informal co-host of this thing, Bob. How you doing, Bob?
Yo, I'm doing fine. How are you? That's not funny. Sorry.
It was pretty funny.
Edit that in post.
And we also have Darren Bell. Darren was on a couple of the podcasts before. Darren, welcome back. How you doing?
Clean and sober. Happy to be here.
Not funny.
It's not supposed to be.
We've also got on today's podcast Lenny Stokes, who was with me on the podcast about running a martial arts club as a business. And Lenny's not able to be here for the beginning of the podcast. He's been held up, but he'll jump in when he gets here. So the topic today, guys, is how much should technical ability input into the decision to promote people through rank? And I want to make a delineation before we start. We're going to start talking about being promoted to black belt. And we'll talk about colored belts later, because I think there's a pretty clear divide between the two. So let's just start.
Are you sure you don't want to start with the Q belts?
No, I'd rather go right to the black belt stuff, because I think that's going to take up the whole podcast, to be honest.
Right, that's what I mean. I mean, if we start with the black belts, we'll be talking for an hour, and then that'll be it.
I defer to you guys. What do you want to start talking about first?
I would love to talk about the distinction between promoting people as Q belts as opposed to promoting people as black belts, and then maybe it'll lead in a natural way into one or the other.
Okay, great.
What do you think?
Sounds good to me. Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, I'll go with that. Yep.
Okay, Bob, go ahead.
So the topic is, how much should technical ability enter into the decision to promote somebody, right? That's it.
Yep.
Okay. Here, let me throw this notion out, see how whether it sticks to the wall. Q belts entirely should depend on technical ability to be promoted, and black belts is where it starts to get gray, and we can talk about where it should get gray in the black belt area later, but what do you think about that delineation?
Geez, I could almost go on the flip side of that, saying where the journey to get to a black belt is more an individual thing and the improvement of the individual themselves. Whereas if you want to reach the level of black belt, that's where all the technical ability has to come in. And by not getting the black belt doesn't mean you failed. It means you've reached the peak of your ability. So you know what I'm saying? Like,
I know exactly what you're saying, and it's a great point. And it brings
it's just kind of flipping the thing on its back, I guess.
It's bringing up something else that I wanted to introduce, and that is that in a lot of disciplines, I don't know about mixed martial arts, but I've trained at some Aikido clubs and Kendo clubs, and the way they work it is you don't like it. Let's talk about Jiu-Shin for a second, our little sphere of karate in Southern Ontario. Once you get a black belt, you have all the privileges of a teacher and all the benefits there too, including decision-making when it comes to promoting other people, etc. In other disciplines, you don't have those privileges until third or fourth degree of black belt, and when you have first, second, maybe third, you are just reaching the maximum of your technical prowess, presumably, and therefore technical ability is all that counts up until those ranks. So first of all, where do we draw the line? Where should we draw the line? And where do various martial arts disciplines draw the line?
Okay, let me jump in for a second and let's delineate, because I think we all agree that there are different criteria for colored belts and black belts. So let's put black belts aside for a second and talk about colored belts. Now, Bob,
You just clouded the issue, because Darren brought up the point that first degree black belt is just the beginning of where your technical ability should be maximizing. Mitch, you're talking about the Jiu-Shin standard, where Q belts up to brown belt testing for his black belt, that's where they should be their most able. And then after that, things change for them, right?
Well, first of all, I haven't said anything yet. All I said is... Let's separate the conversation, black belts and colored belts.
Okay.
there seems to be a disconnect here somewhere. I want to straighten this out.
All my point was is that some people say there should be a delineation between colored belts and black belts, and I'm saying some disciplines make that same delineation between those below third degree black belt and those above.
Okay, so are you arguing that we should delineate differently than colored belts and black belts?
Yes. We're not even at the point where anybody should be saying technical ability should be all that is required to be promoted in any case, in any belt, at any level. So maybe we should start there. What do you think?
For myself, I think there is a delineation between colored belts and black belts. However, I'm happy to forego that for the sake of the conversation, and let's just talk in generic terms about anybody being promoted. Okay. Should there be, and forget rank, what play should technical ability have into being promoted? Is that
okay?
Fair?
I'll throw something out. At lower ranks, that's all that should be considered.
Darren, do you want to respond to that?
It's so difficult because if you take different disciplines or different arts that don't even have a belt system, then all that doesn't matter. You're going through your state of progression, if you will, without any kind of token rank or anything like that. You know you're improving because getting more
fit,
you're getting exactly. Yeah, basically.
Okay.
As new students come in, like when you walk into the school, say a grappling school or Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or something like that, when you walk in, you get twisted up and submitted and you can't see your way out. And you don't know, and after several months, it's the same thing. But then as new students come in, you find you're able to tap them out or get the better of them. And then you realize, I did actually learn because I'm no longer a beginner. And then that kind of natural progression of things just keeps going. And then eventually, you'll go to the limit of your skill level, but you'll have reached that plateau.
Yep.
And there's no rank at that plateau. That's just the plateau you're at. I can understand where the topic comes in, whether your rank should be based on technical abilities. If you're going to have a ranking system in a belt system, there has to be some sort of technical level of proficiency in order to advance.
See, Darren makes a really good point, because there are a lot of martial arts that don't have any kind of ranking system, like boxing, for instance. There's no ranking system in boxing. You don't get a belt. You train and you get better, and you are judged against the other people that you are training with. And this brings into question the whole validity of a belt system in the first place, which is kind of veering off topic, but I think something worth exploring. Does it even make sense to have a belt system? Look, in just to put a point out there, in any martial arts club or system, everybody knows who's good. Everybody knows who's not. And it doesn't matter what rank they're wearing. It's true. I see it time and again.
But, yeah. but when you look to your own club and see who's bad and see what rank they're wearing, it really throws things topsy-turvy.
Which, again, calls into question the validity of having a ranking system. So let's spend a minute talking about that. Does it even make sense to have a ranking system?
There has to be a point at which you are established as an instructor or a master, if not only for not only because of your technical ability, but you're getting old and your technical ability falls off, but you still have the memories. Like, you can teach if you can't do.
Let's add another element to this to make this conversation more complicated. Let's not talk about people who've been practicing and training for 30 years or whatever and are not able to physically perform the way they could and blah, blah, blah. Let's talk about people who are in their prime training. Does it make sense to have a belt ranking system?
If only because when you're conducting a class and you want to separate people out according to their abilities in a quick sort of shorthand way in order to separate the class out so that different people can practice different things. That's a convenient way of showing who should be with whom.
Yeah, but the only way that makes sense is if people are promoted to their ranks who are deserving of those ranks.
Well, that's a different topic.
Well, that's actually the topic we're here to talk about. We've kind of come full circle. We're back to how much should technical ability input into people being promoted to rank.
Well, 30 seconds ago we were talking about whether there should be rank at all, and that's why I threw that in about separating the class out.
But if you were doing that and you had one blue belt that was a legitimate blue belt and then some other clown that just kind of got that rank, if you're quickly pairing the class off and you send those two together, one of them's going to get a horrible workout.
But that's separated. We got to separate those issues, though.
If you
have separate ranks in order to separate them out during the class, that is a convenient way of doing it. Second of all, should we promote them to a rank they don't technically deserve? That's a separate question.
Okay, so you're right, it is. So let's talk about that question, because that's what the podcast is about tonight. Right. Should people be promoted to whatever rank if they're not technically able to support the requirement of that rank?
I'm sorry, now I got to go back to what if you're old and you're a 7th degree black belt?
Then you don't get the rank.
So you take it away as they get older.
Well, no, but I'm not sure. Once you get, like, Jesus, you can only get so good. Even if you got your black belt at 16 years old or 20 years old and you had 10 years and you got up to... Once you get 30, you're going to reach your physical peak, how much you practice.
You're absolutely right. But there's a presumption that after a certain level, it's not technical proficiency. It's your ability to teach or your contribution to the martial arts in general and all that gobbledygook.
Yeah.
And
but then when you think of that, though, like I'm sure there are people out there, but there's got to be people that once they've reached that stage, do they really care whether they get another rank?
Oh, dude. Holy shit. Jesus
I know, I
Christ.
Said, I said there are obviously people out there, but to me it would be like, if like the more I deteriorate, I'd just like to go back and just
right.
say, okay,
me too.
I'm going to go
don't,
down
don't get
a rank.
Me started. Let's say we're dealing with people who aren't us. How do we do that?
Okay,
Mitch, come on in here.
Let me give you a scenario. You're on a grading board for a cue belt grading. No one who is being tested at this grading is older than 25.
I'm going with no. You shouldn't be promoted unless you've reached the technical level that's stipulated. But here's the other thing, too.
But wait a second. Sorry, go ahead, Darren.
There has to be a measuring tool. So it's fine. Remember on paper back in the old days, it used to say what you needed to do in order to go to the next rank. So it would be perform this kata, perform this one.
Not just perform
block.
Them, but perform them to an acceptable level of a...
Okay,
of,
but that's the arbitrary...
That's
there.
The subjectivity. Like, that's where subjectivity
yeah.
comes in. What's
oh, that's what that meant.
Yes.
So it would be like some people are going to say, yeah, that was well done. And then someone else is going, that's horrible. So who's the deciding factor? Who's the judge?
Not only
what,
that,
what you,
there's
what
a,
are you basing
there's,
it on?
There's another complicating factor, and somebody looks at a kata poorly done and doesn't say to themselves, that was well done. They say unconsciously, that was poorly done, but he should get the rank anyway.
That's even worse, because you're not doing that person any favors.
Wow. Like, this is why Mitch chose this topic, I believe. <It's>, I think we're in for a 3-hour episode.
Okay, but look, let me give you a scenario. You've got a white belt, somebody who's been training for 3 or 4 months, and they want to test for the yellow belt, so they come up, they test for the yellow belt. They bust their ass on that testing floor. Their technical ability isn't what you think it should be, but they're trying so hard. Pass or fail?
Wait a second. Can I ask for a clarification?
Sure.
You say that their technique isn't what it should be. You mean they perform a simple... They're not performing simple techniques perfectly, or they're not performing simple techniques well? Of course they're not going to perform these techniques perfectly.
And I wouldn't expect that at that level.
Right, exactly.
But if they're not even performing them well...
It
right,
depends on how well.
That's the point. And this is why this conversation is so complicated. Here's a good question. Wait, pause for a second. Okay, folks, Lenny Stokes just joined us. Lenny, how you doing, man?
Good afternoon. Good evening, as the case may be here. How's it going, guys?
Going good, man. Thanks for joining us.
Sorry I'm late.
No, no worries. You have no concept of time, apparently. 15 minutes. 15
Don't even
minutes.
Go there. It was one of those nights where they had nighttime roadworks, which is unheard of here.
I'm just glad you're able to join us, man.
Me too. Great to be back. And great to meet the infamous Bob there.
Hey, good to meet you, sir. And,
I've heard you on the previous podcast, and you're a voice of infinite wisdom.
Listen.
That's great.
I feel a little sheepish in saying that I didn't. I haven't heard the episode that you were on. It's not nothing personal. It's just
maybe that's not such a bad thing.
The topic wasn't relevant to me, so I didn't listen
to it. That's fair enough, man. That's fair enough.
But anyway, I'll certainly listen to you this time.
No problem.
Okay, so let's jump back into the conversation we were having.
Can I interrupt?
Yeah.
Darren's drumming.
Yes.
Go on.
Hey, he's got a gig tomorrow night. He's got to practice.
Wow, Darren must suck.
That's like somebody doing kata in their living room in their spare time. I'm just practicing.
Okay, so the conversation we were having was, imagine yourself on a grading board. You've got a white belt who's testing for their yellow belt. Their physical ability to perform the techniques is questionable, but they're very motivated. They try really hard. Do you pass them? Yes or no? Go ahead.
Is there a codified on paper requirement sheet about what's needed?
Yes, but it's as vague as they all are. You have to be able to do a low block properly. You have to be able to do an inside middle block.
No.
Okay. They shouldn't be on the floor testing for it in the first place if they're not ready.
That's a really interesting point, Len, is do we only allow people to test who are ready to grade? And if we do, what's the point in having a grading?
No, you can let anybody grade who wants to try and then just fail them if they can.
Now, that contradicts what Len just said. Len just said if they're not able to do it, they shouldn't be grading in the first place.
No, they shouldn't apply to grade if they can't do it.
That's asking,
I think that was his point. I think that might have been his point.
Yeah, but that's asking them to judge their own ability.
Well, I mean, at the end of the day, if I'm their instructor and then for, you know, a cue bit like that, I'm probably most likely going to be the one grading them. So if I put them forward and not able to do it, that reflects badly on my teaching.
Well, I mean, is there a sign-up sheet where you put up your name if you want to grade at the next grading? Or does the teacher come along and say, yeah, I think you should grade? I mean, there's a big difference between those two things.
Absolutely. The way I do it is, if they're gone for the next grade, I'd say, okay, this is what we got to work on, and this is the time frame I expect you to have it ready.
No, but what? Okay, so how do you let them know that they're eligible to grade?
We always do a series of pre-grades, for want of a better word, where we see, okay, is this up to scratch? Okay, we've got that much up to scratch. Now we can give you the next bit. Is that up to scratch? So by the time you come to the actual grade, you've probably done a dress rehearsal of it in stages.
Fair enough, and that's one way to approach it.
But let me throw this in there. If you know going in to a grading that a student is ready, what's the point of having the grading?
Oh, it's the high-pressure situation.
But if you've done the pre-gradings like Len has done or says that he does, I don't think that pressure's there. They've done all that with the pre-gradings.
No, you're in front of a crowd.
I think it's what do you call it? Like a token thing. Like, how many times have you been in school where you might have got a higher grade than somebody, but they're 10 times smarter than you? It's just you happen to do better on the exam. So there's lots of people that are qualified to do whatever they're doing. They just haven't taken the exam, or they didn't do well on the exam. But you still have to do the exam in order to get your certificate. So I think it's just like a
formality.
A token, but yeah, formality. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah.
Yeah, but the difference is in a scholastic format, there are universal rules that have to be followed. In a martial arts format, the only rules that you have to follow are the rules of your own dojo.
Not if Canadian federations had anything to do with it.
Yeah, but that's another topic, and let's not muddy the waters. The way it is right now, each club gets to decide the criteria and the requirement for all of their students to test and be promoted.
It's easy to say you need X, Y, and Z. For one, if you say the way I do things, you do a pre-grade, well then it kind of comes across that the actual grade night is just merely a showcase night and it's a formality. But that's why we always, and Darren has seen a few of our grades. I know the higher grades he's seen, but even on the lower grades, I'll throw them curveballs at the end, say, right, that's what you needed to know. Now let's see how you can adapt and improvise yourself. And I'll throw extra stuff at them. And that's the clincher that'll get them over the line, that it's not just a formality.
Oh, so what you're saying is there's stuff that you will do with the actual grading that could be done on the fly. It's not necessarily the stuff that's written down in their requirement
Absolutely.
Sheets. So let me ask you this, Len. If you're testing somebody, Is there a chance that that student could fail that grading?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay.
Well, if they suddenly fall apart.
Yeah, exactly, Bob. Yeah, I mean, you want it. If they've gotten so far, and let's face it, say they've put 6 months of great training in, and their pre-grades and all the preparation has been really, really good. I'd want to be really cruel to fail them on something they've not tried before. But, as Bob said, you're in front of a panel, so you're dealing with a pressure situation. So this is just an added bit of pressure.
Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. I'm caught on you, but again, about the subjectivity and that the fact that you're going to judge somebody based on your own level, which is, I think that's pretty much human nature, really. Like, even if you have a criteria, you've seen different levels of people performing the different techniques. You know, so even those that are better than you, there's going to be different degrees of better.
In discussing this topic in the past, Mitch and I, which we've done many, many times, we like to bring up the analogy of a piano school and a piano teacher and their students and what the standards are of them progressing through whatever rank they have and what's required of them. And there is so little subjectivity in that because the person can either perform... No, I guess I'm wrong.
If
they make some mistakes, how many mistakes do they make before you fail them and so on?
And have you ever heard, like, you watch a movie where someone plays a piano piece, and to me listening, I'm thinking, geez, that's really good. And then the teacher will just cut the person to ribbon, saying, you're lacking fluidity, you stalled on this didn't go that. And I'm thinking, what are you listening to? That was amazing. So that's even still arbitrary. You can't even use that analogy because there's different levels of music. Like, how do you decide what was done really well and what wasn't?
But they work, so there must be a way that this works.
And it has.
Okay, let me ask you a question here. Should technical ability be the only contributing factor to whether someone is promoted or not?
Okay. Again, we got to talk about low ranks versus high ranks. And are we still on low ranks? I'm all for being still on low ranks. If somebody tries really hard, their technical ability should improve. That's the whole principle of the thing.
That ideally, yes, but it doesn't always play out that way.
What about trying hard and not being technically proficient? It's a hard connection to make.
But that happens a
trying
lot.
Trying hard.
Trying
well,
hard.
You mean like really, and not moving right.
Let's jump to that first video.
Oh, my God. Okay. Right into it. Yeah, right into it we go, into the belly of the beast.
It figures into this conversation.
Okay. Lenny, have you seen it?
Yep.
Yes. Okay. Okay, hang on. Folks, we're going to pause the podcast for a second while we all watch this video, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Okay, folks, I've linked the video that we just watched onto the No Mind Podcast Facebook page. So the video we just watched was of a gentleman who's pretty severely handicapped, I think we can all agree. For all intents and purposes, he has no arms. He has one partial leg, and he's wearing a black belt. And this typifies exactly the reason for this podcast. No one doubts that he has a strong spirit. He's got a lot of heart. I don't mean to infer that he doesn't, but I'm going to turn the conversation over to you guys. What do you think about that video?
It brings up a lot of complicated issues, including how much your brain activity that would move your arms and legs if you had them counts, which is a stupid sounding sentence, but take it to an extreme. If you were Neo in the Matrix and you were fighting, Morpheus. Neo was lying in bed at the time. And yet, you know, we give him full credit for the fighting he did. Now, that's the extreme. I admit that there's a whole spectrum of things to talk about, but let's keep that in the back of our minds as we talk. I'm not arguing that. I'm just putting that out there as a consideration.
I was just thinking two things on that. The first one, it depends on whether you're judging by, as we discussed earlier, your ability. So can that guy do it up to our standards? Well, no. Can he do it up to his standards? Yes. So if you put the time and you improve, even if you just take it to a normal person with any kind of physical challenges, that they would struggle to be able to do it, to do the skill level up to what may be considered or what your abilities are, but they may have improved drastically. So do you award rank as it goes along according to your improvements, or is it based on other people's improvements or a standard of improvements? And then the other thing, just going back to what Bob was saying there, we discussed earlier about when someone gets up to a rank of, say, third, fourth, fifth, or beyond that Dan level, that it becomes more of a mental thing than a physical thing. So maybe that guy never did the physicalities they did, but if he watched The Art of Karate years and years and took in all kinds of things, he might have a really good mind and be a really good instructor, and therefore be at the physical level of other 6th, 7th degree black belts that maybe have aged out and don't have the physical capabilities they had when they were younger.
But we must be willing to get back to the basic notion that if you stood in front of him and said, block this punch, and punch as slowly as you wanted, he couldn't block. The poor man couldn't
block
it.
If you're studying the art of karate as we know it and it's been studied for generations and generations, no. That's it's a simple no. I don't even know how you can argue the point. Yeah, if you want to say, can the guy practice karate, he can to the best of his abilities.
Right.
But that's not necessarily the actual art in the traditional sense.
Okay. What about someone who's a little less debilitated and is in a wheelchair, for example?
I would take it to the same kind of the same opinion.
If I can be a little just probably really blunt on that point is, you've got your different styles of karate. You've got your Shotokan, you've got Shitaru, you've got so on and so forth. What style is he demonstrating? Because he's wearing a black belt. So is he proficient in that style? Probably not. Plus, what level was he at white belt, yellow belt, to progress that this is the pinnacle of his training? Now, I'm not saying that to belittle his abilities, but is it a true reflection of that's the style you're practicing? Because obviously, it's not, because he's not doing what anyone else would do for black belts in that grade. That might sound a bit cruel, but to me, he's not practicing that. He's not demonstrating that particular style of karate. It's the word I'm looking for. It's some kind of variation of it.
To be fair, he wasn't doing a black belt kata. He was doing like a hand shodan or something like that.
No,
okay.
I forget.
Well, the thing is, too, I don't know why this argument has to come in a whole karate sense. Like, he's being led away with that. The audience was clapping, and we're supposed to be sympathetic. If he wanted to go in the Olympics as a pole vaulter or something like that, he wouldn't be able to do it.
Exactly. And
so
if
we wouldn't
he was
laugh
trying to
at
play,
him. He just wouldn't do it.
If he was trying to play a piano, he wouldn't be able to do that either. And this is where I'm really tempted to say, you know, we got to bring it back down to that basic level of, come on. You got to be able to do the thing. It sounds like a stupid sentence, but it gets across the sense of what I'm trying to say.
The thing is, look, this individual has chosen to pursue that line of training, and that's great. And I don't want to downplay or minimize the fact that he has every right to do it and to do it to the best of his ability. My complaint is, he should not be promoted to the rank he has because he simply cannot do the techniques. Now, I want to put a statement out here, and I'd like to get each of your perspectives on this statement. Anytime someone's promoted to a black belt who clearly does not have the physical, technical proficiency to support the rank, it negatively impacts everyone else's rank who is promoted and does have the proficiency to hold that rank.
No question here.
I think there's a huge, huge difference between proficiency and actual ability. And that's the issue here with this individual.
What's the difference?
What's the difference there, Len?
He's disabled. He will never be able to do, you know, a punch the way someone who might do a bad punch. He will never achieve the standard of that because he's physically disabled. He's not able, as opposed to what's the word? It's the ability to achieve the proficiency of it, because he's at a disadvantage, for want of a better word, and it's a very, very tricky area to judge on. Absolutely, well, if you're talking about fully able-bodied people, I 100% agree. If you're not proficient and you're not able enough to do it,
sorry, man. What does proficient mean in your mind?
Proficiency is if you're showing something, you're shown something, and you can do it to a high enough standard that it's almost at the level of perfection that you're instructed at. You're proficient at it. It does the job it's asked to do. If it's a block, is it coming across your body correctly? Is it engaging correctly against the strike against you? And is it effectively blocking away what it's supposed to do? Whereas this gentleman can't block across his face. He hasn't the ability to do it, as opposed to being proficient at, you know, he may be proficient at what he can do, but it's not proficient in what the block is supposed to be.
Let's talk about somebody with one arm.
Okay.
If they're enthusiastic and hardworking, they can overcome that and use the one arm to do all the stuff that they're supposed to do. Of course, they can't do the kata the way they're supposed to be performed, but we would have to take that into account when we grade them. Is that
Okay, approximate? Yeah. Fair point.
Then where do you draw the line?
We contradict myself slightly.
Where you draw the line is that if they have only one arm, they have to overcompensate. They have to compensate, and they have to do a good job in compensating in order to get considered.
But there's going to be a lot of stuff that they can't do that might be part of the criteria for
right,
advancing
like
to the next level.
Perform the kata properly.
Sure. Yeah.
I've encountered this firsthand with a youth of 16 years of age who had basically no bone structure in his lower arms. He arrived, and his parents were quite militant about it, that he had to take part. And I would never not include anyone. Look, we'll try and work around this. But you're there very first day, like make a fist, make a block. And I basically said to the parents, I'm going to have to go away and consult with my own senses about this, and maybe someone who has dealt, because it was my first time really to deal with anybody with physical disability. The parents were quite annoyed that I wouldn't alter the curriculum to make allowances for him. They took him out after one class. I basically told him, look, I'm a little bit out of my depth here. I'm going to have to consult here because I'm not really sure how I can adapt this, because I'd never been faced with this situation before. And
that's actually a great approach.
Because I was just scratching my head. How can I include this guy in a class where you're blocking already, or you're punching or sparring, anything? Like, okay, you can use
Yeah, well,
legs,
we've all encountered that in some form or another, but that was extreme.
Yeah, and it's just... They left, and I never got to really figure it out, you know. But anyway, I pulled away. Darren, you didn't give your opinion on Mitch's statement there.
Is Darren still there?
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't realize we were still talking about the guy in the video. I thought it was about something different.
Mitch making a statement about technical proficiency.
The statement that I had made was: anytime someone's promoted to a black belt who has defined technical deficiencies, I think it negatively impacts the entire perspective of rank. I think people who are promoted who don't deserve the rank they're promoted to, it whittles away at the credibility of the whole system.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going to get to. Like, most MMA clubs now, there is no ranking system. You just go in, as we discussed earlier. So if you decide to be a club that has a rank system, then I assume there has to be a reason for it. And if the person is not able to advance to the next rank, they either can't do it, you've got to rethink your system, or the people are just getting failed. And if they're happy to be a green belt during their entire training, then they're welcome to train. But if they think they want to go to the next level, they're going to have to be proficient enough to it. And if they're not proficient enough, they just don't grade.
That brings up a great point. That disabled guy in the video, we're judging him strictly on his performance during a kata. What if we judged him on his performance during Kumite? It would be a far different story.
I think it'd be equally disturbing. Depending on who he's fighting.
It would be much more cut and dry as to how proficient he was.
Oh, I see what you're saying. All
right. Okay. Oh, yeah. No. Good point.
I've got a question here. We've all watched that video, and we're all judging him on wearing a black belt, comparing him to fully able-bodied people. Maybe he was awarded a black belt for a class that was solely for disabled people, and they have...
He's the only dude in that video, and he's the only dude in the tournament, it looked like.
And in fairness to us...
No, I'm talking about his
That's a great fucking point.
His dojo may have been solely for disabled people, so it may have been.
Well, why is he the only one at the tournament from the dojo?
Well, no.
He was the only one that's videoed there, and the rest of them could be waiting in the background to come onto the tatami and do their pit. Like we don't know.
People in the background.
Wait. To be fair, there's another video on YouTube with a whole crowd of non-abled individuals, wheelchair guys doing synchronized kata, doing self-defense. He has been involved in demonstrations that were completely peopled by not normally abled individuals.
Yeah, that brings us to the thing. We've had the conversation before. Like, people in wheelchairs can play basketball. It's just a different form of basketball, and they can be very competitive.
Lenny, that was a great point. I got to tell you, that was a great point you brought up.
It only dawned on me this minute. You know, I was just going to hold on a second. We're judging them on able-bodied standards, but
yep.
Maybe it's a separate curriculum for disabled.
In which case, that's absolutely clears up the point in that gentleman's case, mm-hmm. Doesn't it, Mitch?
I don't think so.
It could at his club, but that's why some clubs would be a little more lenient on the average person that other clubs might fail. So, I mean, if you're in a club that's all disabled, then obviously there's a lot of leeway given to what the degree or what the standards are or what your abilities are. So,
let me hypothesize a club that only accepted people who were disabled in exactly his way. So he was in a room full of 20 people, and they were all performing that kata, and he was the best at it. He would not be able to block a real punch. He would not be able to actually kick. But their agenda is not to do those things. Their agenda is to move in that way with commitment and focus. How about that? He gets a black belt in that case.
Is that karate, or is that just some weird...
No, it's not karate. No. Don't call it that. Call it something
okay.
else.
Okay. Well, there we go. Well, then it's fine.
Right? See, I hear Mitch struggling...
That's what I said at the start.
The thing is, that
you're not practicing conventional karate. I felt we shouldn't be calling it karate, but then I kind of contradict myself because I'm judging it on fully able-bodied people participating in karate.
But here, if I go running around a mat and I do a couple somersaults, am I practicing gymnastics? I'm an able-bodied person, but I'm certainly not doing gymnastics up to any standard.
I want to stick to this point just for a second. If you're not calling yourself gymnastics, you're calling yourself running around doing somersaults, then you're the top guy. And what if that's what it is? I want to hear Mitch's input.
I'll be honest, I'm struggling with this. There is a societal perspective on what a black belt is. I think that particular video with that particular individual does nothing but whittle away at the credibility.
I understand because he's calling himself a black belt of a certain style of karate. Okay,
right.
Let's at least hypothesize this separate thing and make the issue a little bit clearer. Let's say he didn't call himself a black belt and didn't call what he did karate or self-defense or anything like that. Does that absolve him? We wouldn't have watched the video.
He would be
hardworking and technically proficient at what he was doing.
So it's not karate. He just happens to have the same ranking system as karate.
No, dude, forget the black belt. No ranking.
But he's wearing just a black belt. How do I forget that?
Okay. Well, you know.
Maybe it was a fancy dress competition for him.
No, Bob, I get
you. I know I'm being very harsh with that, but I mean, we're judging purely on aesthetics of what he's wearing then.
The thing is, Bob, I get what you're saying. If we take him as an individual, put him in this context that is outside the norm of what karate is understood to be, we've got nothing to say. We don't even know what we have no idea what their criteria is.
Right. And their criteria is up to them. And according to their criteria, he may be the best in the world.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. It's all a matter of what you proclaim yourself to be and how you do at that. I still have a big problem with the fact that if you put a punch toward his head, he can't block it. Like, am I crazy? Am I taking crazy pills?
Is everyone around here bananas? No, the thing is, Bob, you're absolutely right. And Lenny's right, too. We're all right. If you judge this individual by the standards by which we judge ourselves and our students, obviously there's a gap there. If you judge this individual by a completely different standard that we have no understanding or knowledge of, then we have no right to judge them at all.
I don't see a philosophical problem with this, except for maybe people who object to the political incorrectness of this entire discussion. But as far as what we're talking about is concerned, I don't think there's a big problem.
I got a question for you. Why is it that there are no other martial arts, and I'm talking Taekwondo, and please correct me if I'm wrong. This is completely anecdotal. My own perspective from what I've seen on videos and personal experience and blah, blah, blah. I do not know of any other martial art other than karate that entertains this kind of inclusion.
What other martial arts have kata?
Taekwondo? Judo?
No, wait. Who's a champion in Taekwondo? It's the fighters. It's the fighters who win.
No, it's the fighters who get the press. Taekwondo tournaments have, they call it pumse, but they have kata as well.
Well, they may have people disabled doing those.
I've spent a lot of time watching these videos and looking around and being involved in the martial arts, and I don't know of any other martial art that entertains this kind of, hey, this person's a completely valid black belt. I don't see it in Taekwondo. I don't see it in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I don't see it in certain.
It's like non-contact point karate schools are the cesspool of the poor techniques.
Wow.
They need somewhere to go. They need somewhere to go, and this is the place.
When you're saying
we'll accept you,
but,
and we'll promote you.
When you're saying non-contact, you're talking about these no-touch chi masters. Is that what you're alluding to?
Absolutely.
Oh, Jesus, don't start me on
that.
I'm
a disciple. Oh, don't get me started.
Wait a second, Bob. I interpreted what you said, Bob, as any club that practices non-contact sparring is that cesspool that you were talking about.
No, dude. I'm just saying that the clubs we know and the clubs we're talking about on a regular basis.
I'm sorry, I don't get your point.
Okay.
No, I don't abandon it. I just don't get it.
Okay. You're a prospective student. You want to take a martial art. You're not very good. You're not very motivated. You never will be any good. Where do you end up? But you still want to do it. You still want to get a black belt.
I don't know where you're going with that.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. I can't help you any more than that, dude. Who amongst us is not in a club that promotes people who can't do things very well? That's my point.
I was trying to go back to the original question you posed about why does it seem to be karate that these people do it, and I figured it had something to do with, like, if you think about the karate creed, like, I just looked one example up on the internet here, and one of the student creed was, I will develop myself in a positive manner, avoid anything that reduces my mental growth, I will develop self-discipline in order to bring out the best in myself and the best in others, I will use common sense before self-defense and never be abusive or offensive. I was just thinking, however karate was kind of developed in later times, it was all about the mental and physical development of an individual. So I think that's why people don't go into some of the other arts with disabilities, but they may head toward karate. I was just trying to justify what you were saying, like that's why you've seen these weird things in videos, and it seems to be karate related. I think karate really promotes the individual and the individual's progression to the best of their abilities. And where other martial arts might not do that. And that might be why people with disabilities or challenges will gravitate toward that particular art.
Man, you're a generous soul to say that about most karate schools.
Well, I'm just guessing. I was just trying to figure out an answer to that one. And I don't know, because I've trained at a lot of different schools, and it does seem to be like you'll have people with varying degrees of disabilities in there, whether it's mental or physical. You're always going to have the people that are really good, and you're going to always have the people that are clumsy or overweight or something, but they always seem to be somewhat of an equal, where they're all given a chance to progress to their own, not to their own level, but in their own time frame kind of thing.
Mitch, an overarching narrative to your podcast is the lowering of standards in a very vague general sense. Do you not think that that is a problem more in our circle of karate schools than it is in other martial arts? Is Mitch there? Have we lost Mitch?
No, I'm here. Sorry, I muted myself because I poured a drink. I didn't want my
oh.
I didn't want my fans to hear that.
Didn't want my ice clinking on the
Mitch had gone on Harry Carey there or something.
I've killed myself. I can't take it anymore. Sorry, Bob. Say that again.
Let's see if I can remember.
Lowering of standards.
Do you not think that we specifically have a problem with lowered standards?
Who's we?
We in our sphere.
No, and I speak to the second video that I sent, which is some seventh degree guy doing
Okay, that brings up a great point. No, wait, did the audience see that second one, or are we taking a break, or what's going on?
We're
going
to pause right now and give the audience a chance to have a look at that second video, and I will link it on the No Mind Podcast Facebook page, and have a look, and we'll be right back.
Go.
Okay, so we all just watched that video, and to link it back to what Bob was just talking about, I don't think that the reduction of expectation of ability is specific to our circle. I think it's epidemic in the martial arts, and this video speaks to that.
Which martial art?
Karate. Look, I don't train in other martial arts on a regular basis. I used to, but I don't anymore. So I don't want to speak outside of my anecdotal experience. So let's talk about karate. This guy is absolutely performing karate. His technique is questionable at best. I could do a whole podcast alone on what I think he's doing wrong. So to answer your question, Bob, no, I don't think it's just our circle. I saw, when I went to Ireland a couple of years ago, I saw a lot of really questionable martial arts. I saw some really good stuff, but I saw some really bad stuff too.
Dude, by our circle, I meant our sphere, our style, our the clubs we hang out with.
I know.
Our clubs that do the same thing, that purport to do the same thing we do.
Well, you kind of said two things there that contradict each other. Are they clubs that we, that
no,
I'm in?
No. Okay,
so,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I take that back.
All right, so give me a better definition, sorry.
Clubs that purport to do the same things that we do, stylistically and technically.
From what I see, there are some brilliant practitioners out there, and I can name half a dozen without even trying hard. There are way more poor practitioners. And I think that we, as a martial arts group, for some reason, tend to be more forgiving of poor technique and poor ability than was done back in the day. And I think it's becoming an epidemic in the martial arts that we applaud mediocrity rather than critiquing it. That we pretend mediocrity is excellence rather than conceding what it is, which is mediocrity.
But that just simply means that the mediocre will congregate in those clubs that tolerate it.
No,
what
it means is that mediocrity becomes the defined level or definition of excellence. When someone says that person is excellent and they're mediocre, if the person who's saying it is high enough in rank or the head of a particular system or style, and that person says that person is excellent when that person is only mediocre, all of the people who are the minions of that individual will start to think that that's what excellence is.
And that's only because the person who says that they're good is mediocre themselves. It's the mediocrity itself that's the poison.
It's not the mediocrity itself. It's the admission or the concession that mediocrity is excellent.
That's being mediocre as a teacher.
Yes. So we find ourselves in a causality loop where the person who's in charge goes, this person who isn't that good, I'm going to give them a black belt. And then all the people coming up through the ranks under look at that person and go, that's what I need to aspire to. And this is how we have a whittling away at the quality of what it means to be
no
a black
question.
Belt.
End of episode.
All right.
Bye, folks.
No, I think that the issue here is why that particular thing is a topic or annoys you. I was just thinking that if you take hypothetically a city like Las Vegas, and the UFC has its own performance institute there, and there's probably a couple other really well-known high-level clubs. Because of the size of the city, there's going to be all kinds of other clubs and arts and things like that. So if you're not very good, you're just going to be the lowest on the rung at one of the big name places, just because they're all top level. You're heading for the Olympics, you're heading for the UFC or whatever big name places. So, but you might still want to train in the art, but there's no way you're going to go to those gyms. So you go to the other ones, and it'd be the same. There's bound to be loads of clubs that do that whole mediocrity thing. Well, if you want to be really good, chances are you'll eventually leave that club and go somewhere else.
Okay,
if you like the camaraderie
if you
of the
want
club,
to be really good.
No, but wait a second. So you go to one of those clubs. You want to be really good. So you go to one of those clubs. If that club is all you know, how do you know that you're not really good?
You don't. You'd have to go out and check other places, or you'd have to watch TV or go on the internet or something.
Well, there you go, Darren.
You have to be living in the modern world.
Pretty much.
We had a kid that came to us years ago as a third degree brown belt, ready to go for his black belt. I've got medals for this, medals for that, this kind of thing. And he walked, and he got his ass handed to him three nights in a row by a green belt, and walked away and said, I'm giving up martial arts because what I've been doing for the last 6 years is absolute bullshit.
Well, that was his thing. If he decided he wanted to train at your club, then he could have started over.
Well,
no,
we did. He invited him to train, and he was so crestfallen that he'd been built up to such a standard by those around him and his sensei and so on, that he just, I've been lied to. I'm shit. I'm no use.
I would like to put a point out there to see how it's received. Those martial arts these days, which encourage and develop the excellent in their students, are they the ones that promote fighting in tournaments, like fighting other people from other clubs in various, you know, whatever way they choose to do so, not kata oriented? Because in kata, you can cheat and you can be that seventh degree crappy guy and have people go, yay. But when you're fighting, that's a more objective way of determining your ability, isn't it, Mitch? What do you think?
It depends on what you define as ability. Look, the things that make you a good fighter are, as much as this is going to fly in the face of what we've been taught for years and years, being a good kata practitioner does not mean you're a good fighter and vice versa. So it depends what you mean by being proficient. Because someone is a good fighter doesn't mean they're a good kata practitioner. And because
absolutely not, but it means they're good.
It means they're good at one aspect.
At that.
Go ahead, Darren.
Yeah, at that. Like, that's what I was going to say. They're good at that, but not necessarily. Like, I've seen lots of guys that are really good at point sparring, but if you threw a punch on them on the street, they drop. Like, they just, because they're...
That's just an argument against point fighting.
That's not an argument. I disagree with that. That's not an argument against point fighting. There's nothing wrong with looking at point fighting as an art form unto itself.
Dude, you're getting close to saying there's nothing wrong with that guy with short arms and legs doing what he's doing.
And I already conceded that in his bubble, in his world, fine.
Okay, so in point fighting, in their world, fine. But we just, who made the point that Darren did? You could take the best point fighter and actually fight him, and he very well may not fare very well. And I get your point, too. It all depends on what your priorities are, but that's kind of begging the point of this entire conversation. Yeah. We're talking about objective ability.
In order to talk about objective ability, you have to have an end game in mind. Objective ability relative to what? Point fighting? Kata? Street fighting? Like, there needs to be some sort of identifier of what we are shooting for in terms of that objective ability.
You're absolutely right. There are 100 different spheres to pursue in the martial arts. Everything depends on the head instructor of a club. Like, doesn't everything come down to that fucking thing?
The head instructor certainly defines or should define what the focus of that club is.
And the standards.
I think my biggest issue is when a head instructor claims to have a certain perspective and promotes people who don't meet the standard that they define.
That's the root of the problem of this whole problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's also very apt with the video we just started to discuss this or anyway. He's a seventh Dan. Like, what was his defining criteria to achieve seventh Dan in what's clearly a very poor standard?
And who granted him that?
Yeah.
what eighth degree granted him that? what do his kata look like?
You know what? Do you know what the martial arts could use? You guys relate to this. I'm not sure what they have here, Lenny. But if you take kids hockey, you have like there's A, B, and C, and it goes down from there. So A being like the major junior A's, like the Peterborough Petes and stuff like that, that would get drafted in the NHL. And then they have a B team, and then they'd have a C team. And as when you're a little kid, you can play hockey on a team with a bunch of people that are equal to your level, and they can all float around the ice and nobody really does anything, but everybody has a good time. But for those that really take it seriously, they immediately go to a different league that has a different level of standards, and those guys all compete, and it would kind of continue up from that. So it'd be good if you could either have a class or a club or a farm club or something where we're all in here, we're having a good time, we're going to do some self-defense, we're going to get you better than you are now, but you're not going to be at the same level as these other guys that are training for fights and stuff like that.
That's a great point, and what a wonderful world if that was true for the martial arts. But what are you going to do about those crappy teachers?
There's nothing you can do about that. And it's a free society. If you want to open up a club and teach, and if people want to fall for it and go for it, that's their business.
My point earlier was, what do you do if you're not very good and you're not very motivated and you're not really that enthusiastic and you really only want to go to class once a week? And what club will you gravitate to? And that's the problem.
Yeah, there's bound to be one out there that's happy to take your money.
Exactly. More than one, and that's another topic, I guess.
I would hasten to say it's a greater issue than more than one. I think every karate club will take your money.
I didn't listen to your episode with Lenny, which was exactly about this, right?
I don't
think there's a business.
If a student goes to a karate club and says, yeah, I want to train, I don't think any club will go, oh, no, we're not going to take your money. You're not allowed to train here. Every club will accept that student as a student. I think the problem starts to blossom when that individual, with their lackadaisical attitude and their indifference, starts getting promoted up
right
through the ranks.
I'm looking at the talking points now for this episode, and I think that's like number one.
We're running a little long, but there's a couple of other talking points I really want to get to. I know that a lot of clubs, when a student is a colored belt, let's say a student gets his green belt, and then they leave for whatever reason, doesn't matter why, they just got bored, they went to school. When they come back, do they keep their green belt, or do they get demoted to a lower rank?
My gut reaction is make them take the green belt test again.
Well, let them take a couple classes and you can ascertain pretty quickly whether they're still at that level or not.
The point being, we question their ability to maintain that green belt rank.
That low rank, yes.
So a black belt, someone gets promoted to black belt and they leave for 2 years. Their job has them traveling, whatever. They haven't trained at the club in 2 years and they come back. Should their black belt rank be questioned?
Well, this brings me back to a point I made 3 hours ago. At some point in the black belt range, you are accorded full privilege, and that sort of stuff doesn't apply. You know, I'm a fan of the way it works in other martial arts, and that up to, like, say, second Dan, yeah, take the test.
No, I've never actually been faced with this scenario because anyone who's left me never came back.
Oh, note to self. Don't join Lenny's club.
So, is that just based, Mitch, is that based on just returning to your own club? Or if I earn a black belt at one of these questionable clubs we were talking about before and I show up at somebody else's club and I'm not at that level, am I still awarded the same considerations?
No. This is the club.
Just your own club.
Yeah, just your own club. Someone
here, I've been demoted, so I understand that concept.
Should black belts be afforded the privilege of never losing their rank?
At some point, right?
At some point, but where's that line?
At least we agree on that. Unless Darren and Lenny don't agree on that.
Ooh, that's a really tough one, actually.
Yeah.
I think somebody who achieves black belt, you're going to hit a level where you're not going to, okay, you mightn't be as proficient, but you're not going to lose the knowledge and basic skills that you've learned over those cumulative years of training.
Unless it's been a decade since you
practiced. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Like, so I'm the guy.
Where do you draw the line then?
I know this from first-hand knowledge. I haven't walked into a dojo in, 20 years?
So you haven't trained, and it's not been 20 years. We shut our club down 12 years ago.
All right, okay, thank you.
If you were to decide that you want to start training in karate again and you go to another club, would you expect them to respect your black belt rank?
Absolutely not. I would absolutely go through a class, have the teacher say to me whatever he says, and I'll go through, jump through whatever hoops he wants. I'll put on a white belt. I don't fucking care.
Yeah, I'm with Bob. I've done that before. I've showed up a club in another city and just walked in as a white belt, but I explained to them, I used to train before, but it's been a long time. So I'll just sit at the back and I'll wear this belt, and that's it.
It's like your point before, Darren. It'll be immediately obvious that you have abilities, and then you can test for whatever is appropriate. Blah,
okay,
blah.
Here's okay, a
let,
point.
Let me throw the cat among the pigeons.
Whoa. What? I've never heard that expression before.
Let him throw the cat on the pigeons? What?
let me throw the cat among the pigeons. In other words, I'm going to let me upset the argument here. Yeah.
Cat among the pigeons. Got it.
Is that a new expression for you?
I've never heard that before.
Oh, sorry. We're in okay. Canada. Okay. Let me fuck shit up a bit then.
That's better.
There you go.
So let's suppose I achieved my black belt. Say 15 years ago, and I'm teaching, and eventually I get to a stage, say, shit, I can't spar anymore, or I'm slowing down.
Wait, doesn't sound familiar at all.
Okay, so now I'm at a stage where I can't do things proficiently that was expected of me as a black belt. Does that then diminish my ability as a black belt? Am I now, shit, you're not up to that standard anymore. So does that mean I should be step back in rank because I'm not a standard anymore?
The way it is, and I'm not complaining about it, I think it's a good idea that once you reach a certain rank, if you contribute, you should increase in rank. Now, okay, we can argue about what contribution consists of, but your physical participation should no longer be relevant after a certain point.
And a lot of this discussion kind of convinces me or drives thoughts that I had before that I don't think rank should even exist in the martial arts. You progress to the level of your own ability and you're not awarded anything for it. If you want awards and you've worked hard, go to a tournament and get whatever award you get at the tournament.
Fair enough.
Who are your peers to judge you? And then at that stage,
nobody. Right. No one's judging me.
In a club, the clubs you're familiar with, Darren, do the students universally acknowledge who the head instructor is and who the juniors are and defer to them in all the things, or how does it work?
Yeah, you learn pretty quick. Like, you get in there, obviously the instructor is the guy teaching. That's it. And then when you're working out, you see who around you. You know who's been training for a while and who hasn't. And as the longer you're there, the faces get familiar, and some of the people like go by the wayside. New people come in, so you see the new people as opposed to the older people.
Mitch, were you saying something?
I have a question for you and Darren. And more for Bob than Darren, but I'm curious about Darren's perspective as well. If you decided, Bob, to come back to Peterborough, and let's say you moved to Peterborough and you just decided you wanted to start training again, and you came up to Jiushin, would you expect to be recognized as a black belt? Or would you say, John, the current head instructor of Jiushin, can you determine for me what rank I should wear?
Right. That's a great question, man, because you got things mixing up in my head right now. Because in my head, I'm ahead of John in rank. So what do I do about that? You know what? That's a great question, and it might force me to come to existential terms about what rank is and what it means to me and what that club means to me, and I may not care, and I might... I just might defer to whatever the fuck the guy says, because I just wouldn't care. I wouldn't care about all this goddamn rank stuff, because this podcast episode is getting me worked up, but all the shit that you see on a daily basis about this, it brings me back to a thought I've had for decades, and that is there only should be white belts and black belts. If that were the case, let's say the ideal world, there were only white belts and black belts, and I went back to Jushin, and there and I walked up to the black belts, and I said, I want to join the club. I would put on a white belt, and I would say, do with me what you will.
Darren?
Yeah, probably the same thing, because you're going to make a mockery of everybody else. If you have any kind of skill level left, you know, you go in there and if you say, like, look, I'm happy to start at the beginning, and you're just terrorizing everybody else that's well above you, they're going to have to advance you quick enough anyway. And are you going there because you want to learn and get back in shape, or are you going right. there for your ego?
Wait a second. That also overlooks the fact that we're getting old. Like I am. I don't know about you guys. I'm 61, and what do I do about the fact that I can't do the stuff anymore? What do you do
about
that?
I'm 35.
times 1.5. Do the math.
Plus tax.
VAT.
I've got to disagree with both of you, by the way, on that one.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I've heard your previous podcasts, Bob, and like you've obviously put a lot of time into martial arts, and you've gone Aikido and Judo as well. Is it my right with saying that?
Yeah, a little Kendo. Give me some credit.
Kendo as well. Actually, I knew there was another one. So I mean, for someone of your skill set in different martial arts. To walk, you know, not be involved in the club and go back and be told, I'm not going to recognize your black belt. I personally couldn't handle that. No, it's Jesus. Here's a guy who's got a world of knowledge. You're not going to forget it and just blow it out your ass and just, it's gone. Okay, it may be rusty, but there's no way in hell that's just all going to vanish after all those years involved in martial arts. So to me, you walk in the door of my club tomorrow and you say, I'm Bob Maxine. Guys, stand up. Bow into the sensei here. This guy has got a world of knowledge, and you're a black belt. You know, I'm sorry. That's my feeling on it. It's a respect thing as much as proficiency thing.
I really understand where you're coming from, man. But you know what? I don't like rank. I don't like applause. I don't like.
Okay, let me say. I'm not honoring your rank. I'm honoring the respect we have for the knowledge you've gained over the years.
Which is kind of what it is, isn't it?
Exactly. Fair enough.
We bow, we go
I'll take that.
You walk in civilian clothes, I'm still going to get my class to line up and say, this guy has put years into this. I don't give a shit what color belt you're wearing.
It's not just the number of years. I got to demonstrate my knowledge. And if I do, then great, I'll take the credit.
Okay, I want to throw a question out here. Len,
yeah.
What if that guy in that second video walked into your dojo? That seventh degree who did that questionable kata. Would you lend him the same level of respect?
Yes, that's a very good point, you bastard.
You bastard. I'm going to learn how to say that in Irish. You bastard.
Right, yeah. Oh, man, you've turned my argument on its head. No, do you know what? There's exactly it. Because I know the standards you guys come from. Because I've met Darren's dad, I've met you guys, I've trained with you briefly, Mitch, Darren's trained with us, I know the standard. So I suppose, it's not that I have a preconception, but if Bob comes from the same circles, well, I know this is of a high standard.
Oh, whereas don't worry, I'm better than Mitch.
I listened to your last podcast about reminiscing.
Look,
so I mean, I suppose, yeah.
Can I be straight here, Lenny?
Yeah, the deck is slightly low.
Mitch can kick my ass on any given hour of any given day. So
I've seen Mitch demonstrate. He took my class about an hour one night. It was kind of, yep, this guy can move.
Yeah.
But so I suppose I'm a little bit. The deck is slightly loaded because I know your background. Whereas this guy walks in and says, I'm a seventh Dan. Well, the first thing I'm going to do is get suspicious if somebody says they start quoting me the fifth, sixth, seventh Dan. I'm kind of, okay. But that being said, and I'm sure you guys might agree with this, you meet a guy from martial arts circles. If you're used to dealing with skilled martial artists, you kind of get in the first 4 or 5 minutes a feel for whether they're bullshit artists or whether they're actually genuine, purely by the way
they behave. 4 or 5? Let's talk
okay,
about
I'm
one.
Seconds.
Exactly.
So you can kind of, your bullshit filter comes on fairly quick for the likes of that. Would that be a fair point?
Very fair.
I think what Len just said lends itself to one of the talking points And I'm really rethinking my whole perspective on this. I can't believe how much subjectivity plays a role in all of this. This whole discussion about, you know, who's worthy of what rank, there's so much subjectivity involved. I don't know that you can get away from being forgiving of any perspective on rank because of that level of subjectivity.
Well, what about the idea that other martial arts have, by the way, of national standards that all the clubs are expected to follow? Just want to put it out there that I've been involved in martial arts that are organized in exactly that way, and I'm not sure how much that has to do with how standard their standards are, how consistent they are, but those are the clubs that were of high standard. That's all I'm putting out.
This is one of the few podcasts that just seems to come at it from 1,000 different perspectives. I've been loving this conversation.
Yeah, so I wasn't conscious of the time going passing at all.
Yeah, my first thought was I don't think we came to any legitimate
We did at one point.
We came to a lot of legitimate confusion. Yeah.
We came to a lot of conclusions in that first video.
But I mean, I think it's definitely evoked some questions and
holy moly,
things to think about.
We gotta have a part two.
That's almost, yeah. Let everybody go home and think about it and then come back with their arguments.
Exactly. All right, guys, let's go around the table once. Any final comments, Bob?
Oh, Jesus Christ. No, it's been a great time and good to meet you, Lenny.
Absolutely. I mean, hopefully in person sometime.
No, I'm not going to Ireland. You have to come over to Canada.
we can do that.
All right. Darren.
Just in this brief conversation thing, I like Bob's idea where you just have white and black. So you put in, and if you're not ready for black, it doesn't mean you'll never be ready. It just means it might take, in some people's cases, forever. But you just kind of go through the motions, you better what you can, and then if one day you're awarded it, so be it.
After this conversation, I'm actually converted to that train of thought. No, I'm serious. Before I was kind of don't know, but the more we trash things around this evening, it's gonna, yeah, do you know what, you're dead right.
It's really really thought-provoking, this episode, and I want to do it again.
It just made me think of something. Back in the day, I think they had school uniforms, and definitely over in Ireland they're fighting with that right now, but one of the reasons to have school uniforms is so that everybody's on an equal plane. So you're not going in from a rich family and having nice clothes and somebody else is wearing nothing. Everybody wears the same thing. And I think that could be like in the martial arts, where you're not on a rank system. Everybody's kind of going in there on an even keel. And if you expand and get better and you have physical attributes, you'll be better at things. But you're still all equals. You know what I mean?
I like that perspective. I like the idea of no predetermined perspectives on anybody. The only thing that determines your place in the hierarchical order is your ability. I think that's...
Exactly.
So, yeah, exactly. I've always been a fan. Bob and I have talked about this a couple of times, about having only two ranks, white and black. I think that's brilliant. I can't speak for Europe, but I think the North American perspective, that would never survive. People need that immediacy of validation. They need to be told how great they are.
Yeah, I think it's the same here.
I don't think it would fly, but I think it's a great idea. All right, guys, we're going to bring this to a close. I want to thank all three of you for coming on the podcast. It's been awesome. Once again, please leave any comments you'd like to make on my personal Facebook page or the No Mind Podcast Facebook page. Send me an email at nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com, and we're going to bring it to a close. Thanks so much, guys.